Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The last remaining strategic arms control agreement is about to end. The New START Treaty was signed by the United States and Russia. Popular with the public, it functioned as an important guardrail on regulating nuclear weapons arsenals. Experts now warn of a new arms race. Crosstalking Arms Control, I'm joined by my guest, Ray McGovern in Raleigh. He's a former CIA analyst. In Bethesda, we have Peter Kuznick. He is a professor of history at American University, as well as co-author with Oliver Stone of The Untold History of the United States. And in Delmar, we cross to Scott Ritter. He is a former intelligence officer and a UN weapons inspector. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Gentlemen, I'm going to pleasantly surprise you. We're not going to talk about the Epstein files. We're going to talk about something that is affects the very existence of humanity moving forward. Ray, the New START Treaty is about to end. What is its significance, and what is the significance of not having such an arms control agreement in place? Ray.
Peter, I was there for the first one 54 years ago, 1972, when the balance of terror finally became a balance and no one would violate it. That was the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. Ever since then, we've had treaties in place that would regulate, limit, and take care of this competition. Now, if this goes out, and I still harbor a little hope that we have 2 days left, if this goes out, there's no restraint on these limits. The limits will go sky high, and the military-industrial complex will have won, despite the polls that indicate that 87% of the American people would like Mr. Trump to pick Mr. Putin's offer up and say, yeah, okay, we'll keep those new START limits in for one more year, as you suggested way back in September. I finally got my act together. Yeah, we're going to do that. He's only got 2 more days that he could do that.
You know, Peter, why is there such indifference? Because that's what you get from the authorities today in the West. I mean, I'm a child of the Cold War. Arms control agreements were always there. And as Ray points out, they're very popular with the public. And because they were so popular, we really didn't have to think about an arms race because it was under control. It was verified. Why is there so much indifference to it now? Or maybe it's just about a whole lot of money that could go to certain people. Peter.
I'm not sure if it's indifference. I mean, Ray mentioned that 87% of Americans are in favor of extending it.
No, what I'm saying, the indifference on part of the authorities, of Trump and his circle, et cetera.
I get it. 86% of Republicans are in favor of extending it. So this is very, very popular. Some of the authorities, these nuclear planners, I go back to August 20th, 2024. There were two crucial articles that came out that same day. David Sanger in the New York Times front page said the U.S. is preparing to fight and win a three-front nuclear war against Russia, China, and North Korea. But the same day, there was an article in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists saying that while some nuclear planners still believe in deterrence theory and maintaining a second strike capability, other nuclear planners think we now have the capability of a preemptive strike against Russia that can knock out all of their Russia and China that to which they would not be able to respond, because we can pinpoint and target their nuclear submarines, which was always a part of the triad that was maintainable, that would provide security. Now he said, now they believe we can knock that out. So even more dangerous than the indifference on the part of nuclear planners is many of them believe we can fight and win a nuclear war, which is absolute insanity. This is real madness. But these people have got the ear, or some of them have the ear of Donald Trump. And during the first term, when Donald Trump was briefed on how much we've cut a nuclear arsenal since 1986, Trump said we should increase our arsenal tenfold, to which Rex Tillerson called him a fucking moron. You know, so you know, Trump is on both sides of this. Some days he sounds reasonable, says we have too many nuclear weapons, we need to cut them. Other days he says we welcome a nuclear arms race because we're going to win it. And then other times he says we're going to have a bigger, better treaty. We'll let this expire. This is not the kind of leadership that the world needs right now.
You know, but Scott, there's the criticism of letting it lapse is that they need new weapons. Some of these weapons are 50 years old, and we need new weapons, and we need to have we should be unrestrained, meaning we shouldn't have another arms control agreement. You know, what befuddles me, Scott, is that during the Cold War, these agreements were signed, okay? I mean, the United States and Russia are not at war with each other, at least officially here. Wouldn't both sides want to just put nuclear arsenals on the side to ensure some kind of balance? But the Trump administration, again, seems to be quite indifferent to it. If it lapses, it lapses. That's considering the importance of this agreement, that is terrifying. Scott.
Well, look, we go back in history, the history of arms control. There's always been a struggle in the United States, and I also believe in the Soviet Union and Russia, between those people who believe that they should be pursuing nuclear superiority, that, you know, these are existential weapons. You can't have deterrence if the other side perceives weakness, et cetera. Both sides have argued for the need for a nuclear arms race, for modernizing. And this has existed since time immemorial. The difference was when Ray was negotiating the ABM treaty, we took the Soviets seriously because they could kill us all. That's what mutually assured destruction was all about. If you went to nuclear war, you would die. That's what gave us the ABM treaty, the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, the INF treaty. I was a participant, first inspector on the ground in the Soviet Union. I'm taking that to my grave. And and also the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, which led to New Start. All of these were premised on the notion that without arms control, we would unleash an arms race that could bring it into the world. You know, when George W. Bush withdrew from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty in 2002, that people were saying, this, you're undoing the fabric. The Russians said, we'll withdraw from START II treaty. We're going to get rid of the demerving. And Colin Powell said, we don't care. We don't view Russia seriously anymore. They're not a threat. Russia could do anything it wants to do. We don't care. We're solely focused on our needs. Now, we move forward to when New START was being negotiated, because if we didn't negotiate a New START treaty in 2010, there would be, again, no arms control. The Senate told the Obama administration that if you don't get a new treaty, an arms control treaty, we won't have confidence in what the Russians are doing, what they have. And without that confidence, we have to assume the worst and we'll go full bore. That means nuclear testing, new nuclear weapons, increase in everything. That was the importance of arms control. That's the treaty that's expiring right now. And so we have this indifference on the part of negotiators who stopped taking Russia seriously at the end of the Cold War. They haven't woken up to this new reality. And we also have the Senate that operates politically because they need to be convinced that, you know, things are there, that there's parity, that there's stability. If we remove arms control, the idiots who don't believe in arms control are going to be promoting an arms race at a time when the Senate will feel vulnerable and we're all going down a highway to hell.
You know, but Ray, I mean, again, I'm kind of befuddled by it all. I mean, most people would agree that these treaties, these agreements, they actually worked. And that's the precedent to continue them. I mean, how many people are saying they didn't work? Go ahead.
Well, the problem, of course, is the military-industrial complex. You have 87% of Americans who want it to be renewed, or at least the limitations to be kept on for another year, as Mr. Putin suggested way back in September, on September 22nd of last year. You know, something prevents the president from being able to say a simple, okay. Now, all he has to do is say, all right, we'll keep those limitations on for one more year, as you suggested, Mr. Putin. He can't say that. What am I saying? I'm saying here I am in the Kremlin. I can only interpret that to mean that Mr. Trump is not his own man, if indeed he ever wanted to renew these limitations, or that he's just deferring to the military-industrial complex. I, Mr. Putin, have all manner of weaponry that can keep the balance, but I just have to make sure that Mr. Putin knows about Burevestnik and Poseidon and Harishnik. All I have to do is remind him about that. Maybe he'll come to his senses, maybe not, but at least we have our own deterrent. It has to be clear to the Americans, and I'm going to make it clear to the Americans.
Yeah, but Peter, the technology's advanced since the signing of the START treaty, all the more reason to get to the table and to include these new systems here, including hypersonic missiles, cyber weapons, orbital systems. I mean, there's a lot that needs to be done instead of just walking away from it. Peter.
Well, that makes too much sense for Donald Trump. But the arguments that are made, first of all, the American nuclear experts, in quotes, always accuse the Russians of cheating on every treaty, even though the basis for these accusations are very, very flimsy in most cases. And now what they also say is that China needs to be included. China has been increasing the size of its nuclear arsenal more rapidly than any other country. So China, which believed in a limited deterrent with 200 nuclear weapons, didn't trust its second strike capability, so now it's up to about 600. The Pentagon says China plans for 1,000 by 2030 and 1,500 by 2035. So the Trump and people around him say they want to include China. They don't, however, want to include Britain and France and some of the or Israel.
There you go.
They want to include
all right,
China.
Peter, I have to interrupt you. We're going to have to go to a hard break here. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on arms control. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelch. Remind you, we're discussing arms control. All right, let's go back to Peter in Bethesda. I interrupted you because of the break here. Please continue.
China has shown no interest in being included. China wants to first reach nuclear parity, and then it'll talk about arms control. But China has a no-first-use policy. The U.S. doesn't have a no-first-use policy. One of the first things we could do that would make the world a little bit safer is to agree on a no-first-use policy. That's not ironclad, certainly. Anybody can break it when they want. But at least it shows a commitment to trying to resolve things peacefully. But diplomacy has become a dirty word in the United States.
Yes.
It became a dirty word under the Biden administration. And Trump, you know, what we've seen with the bombing of Iran, with the kidnapping of Maduro, with his threats to the world, taking advice from the Stephen Millers, these, you know, thugs who go back to social Darwinism, Pete Hegseths, Kristi Noems. I mean, the people around him, you know, either they're anti-communist zealots like Marco Rubio, or they're outright fascists. And so these people do not have a sense of the kind of diplomacy and are not pushing Trump in that direction. There's more hope from the MAGA base at this point than there is from the people surrounding Donald Trump.
You know, Ray, one of the START agreement and other ones like it created a precedent for arms control, for limits and verification. But if the United States is so indifferent to that process, what's to stop other countries like Japan, Germany, Saudi Arabia, and many other countries that go down that path? Because if the United States is not committed to an arms control regime, and there's going to be an arms race, what's going to stop other people going to say, I'm not safe, we have to build our own bomb? Oh, Iran, we should have a bomb as well. You see the logic of that, Ray.
Well, there is logic to that, and ex-President Medvedev has made that explicit. Non-proliferation will be torn asunder, and that's significant. But I'd like to go back to a silver lining here. There is evidence, in my view, that the back channel is being used very profitably between Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump. I think that the fracas, the almost attack on Iran has been solved by Russian good officers after they talked to Lariani and using the back channel to Trump. That, I think, has died down. There's no reason why that modicum of trust cannot be applied to this kind of issue, strategic arms. And I would just say that, lest I seem like a Pollyanna here, the key is dovere no proverai, okay? Proverai, trust but verify. That's where Scott came in. That's why he spent 2 years plus in some god-awful place in Siberia verifying. So that's the saving grace. If they ever come to their senses, there is a modicum of trust in this back channel between Trump and Putin. I'm convinced. I see its effects right now on Iran. And so as long as there's a verification, I'll just say one more thing. I was involved in SALT One, okay, the ABM treaty, and they asked us, Kissinger asked us, look, if we go for these limits of two ABM, can we verify that? Will the Soviets cheat? And we said, and I went back and I found out that, yeah, we would verify that within a week. And I told Kissinger, okay, we don't know about a week. He said, okay, that's enough. Did they cheat? Yeah, they cheated. What do they do? It's god-awful radar in the middle of Siberia. Yeah. Krasnoyarsk was the name of the place. We called them on it. Reagan said, show the Soviets the pictures. Yeah. And it took when Gorbachev came in to say, all right, it's an ABM radar. We'll tear it down. And that was the first wall that the Soviets turned.
Yeah, but, you know, Scott, it's very interesting that Ray brings up trust. And again, it was during the Cold War. Rivals, they learned to trust each other, okay, a demonstration effect, okay? I just think that mentality is gone right now, and there are so many instances. I mean, look, I mean, we've been, last few weeks, we've been talking about the United States and Iran. Well, right before the United States attacked Iran, the United States has been in negotiations with Iran. I mean, trust has to work both ways. And as much as I want the Russians to continue to push to prolong the treaty, I have a hard time believing that they're going to trust someone like Donald Trump and the people that are around him. Scott.
No, you're right. Just a historical footnote. The Krasnoyarsk radar actually wasn't capable of any ABM function. The problem wasn't its technical capabilities, it's its location. So the Soviets didn't cheat. They made a mistake. But cheating implies intent to actually do something under the radar. My experience with the Soviets and my experience with the Russians is that they're assiduous in their commitment to arms control treaties. Unfortunately, the United States is not. We have violated every treaty that we've been involved in, either directly or indirectly. And it's not just our violations of treaty. We also have forsaken, and raise 100%, trust but verify. This is what is absolutely essential. This has made the INF treaty work because we had people on the ground like me, and they had Soviets on the ground in the United States, and we didn't trust you. We verified, and that's how you build trust. Mm. But we've thrown that all away, both in an arms control sense. Arms control is a delicate balance. It's not just the caps that Ray's talking about, the importance of that. Anti-ballistic missile treaty, there's a reason why that came first, because we needed to get away with the notion that you can defend against nuclear war, that if you had a nuclear war, we all died. What the United States has done since Reagan's time is say, no, we can defend ourselves. And that tells the Russians, why? That means you're trying to attack us first, preemptive strike. Ask the Chinese why they're doing what they're doing, because we have articulated a plan that has been set forth in writing, the nuclear employment plan, that speaks of a preemptive first strike against China in case of a war on Taiwan. That's why the Chinese are going insane. It's not that the Chinese are creating this problem. We're creating this problem. Intermediate nuclear forces, the framework of strategic armed reduction. We withdrew from that treaty. We withdrew from that treaty. And then we lie about everything. Christopher Ford was the chief negotiator who oversaw the death of the INF treaty. And he is the guy who said, I don't believe in arms control. And this is the other problem. We have people who just don't believe in arms control. Arms control only exists to solidify American superiority. So why would the Russians ever believe any of this stuff? We don't take it seriously. And so, you know, look at the last thing. Putin has said 1 year more, you know, moratorium, extension. But there's two conditions. One, no ballistic missile defense, no Golden Dome. Well, we just have a $1.5 trillion defense budget, which is saying Golden Dome. Two, don't deploy INF systems into Europe. We're getting ready to deploy Dark Eagle into Germany this summer. There will be no moratorium because the United States can't be trusted with a moratorium. And this is the problem. We have to rebuild that trust. And frankly speaking, that cannot happen with this president and the people who surround him with. We have to relearn arms control, which tragically means we probably have to go back to being on the abyss of the nuclear Armageddon that existed in the late 1960s, early 1970s, that allowed people to wake up for the absolute necessity of arms control. And we need a new Ray McGovern to go and create a new anti-ballistic missile treaty. Then we need new arms control people, a new Scott Ritter to go over and begin rebuilding that trust through verification. We might have to reinvent the wheel, but I don't know if we can survive that because, as you said, the weapons today are much more dangerous. The situation is much more unstable. And, you know, that's why it's important to retain what we have. It may not be perfect, but it worked.
Yeah, but Peter, we all remember the bad movie called SDI or Star Wars under Ronald Reagan. It was never going to work. And from what I've been, research tells me, experts say this is just the same pipe dream, this Golden Dome.
It's another boondoggle who are the military producers, the military contractors. It's not going to work. It's going to be fabulously expensive. We're talking really, if they're trying to do what they say they want to do, tens of trillions of dollars. And it's not a Golden Dome, it's a golden sieve. Yeah. I mean, we know that all of these systems can be easily overwhelmed with more offensive weapons and decoys, so which is so much cheaper than this kind of Golden Dome or missile defense system. You know, but to get back to what Ray and Scott were saying, I go back to June 10th when Tulsi Gabbard, in one of her rare moments of lucidity, issued a 2.5-minute video starting off in Hiroshima that says, goes on to say, the world is closer to nuclear annihilation today than it's ever been. And then back on October 20th, Sergei Naryshkin, the head of the Russian intelligence agency, SVR, issued a statement in which he says, the world is now experiencing the most fragile moment for international security since World War II. Well, Tulsi Gabbard's statement came out 2 days before Israel started bombing Iran. Scott mentioned some of the treaties we've abrogated. There's also the JCPOA. I mean, why are we in this mess with Iran again? Because we had a treaty that was working, which they mothballed their centrifuges. They gave up their highly enriched uranium. It was working beautifully, and then Trump blew it up. So we've abrogated these open skies, one treaty after another, the United States has abrogated, and now we're on a brink. The bulletin atomic scientists just moved the hands of the doomsday clock from 89 seconds to midnight to 85 seconds. It should be 30 seconds to midnight. I mean, people should be running around with their hair on fire, but there's not that kind of level of concern, sadly, even though we all share it. And we know that how dangerous a moment this is for human civilization.
Well, and that's why I made the program. And when I hope that everyone will like, share with everyone that they know, because This is one of the few programs I know of that's even talking directly about this problem. That says a lot. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Raleigh, Delmar, and in Bethesda. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.